3. Rye was perched on the edge of Kel's bed, rubbing his collar while Hostra tried to wrap Kel's shoulder. It was healing, but not fast enough for a ball. "Suck it up, brother," he chided the prince. "Tomorrow will be worse." He'd won. It had been close, so close, and not just because beating Kisimir by anything more than a hair would raise suspicions. No, she was good. She was excellent. Maybe even the best. But Kel wasn't ready to stop fighting yet. Wasn't ready to give up the freedom and the thrill and go back to being a trinket in a box. Kisimir was strong, but Kel was desperate and hungry. And he'd scored the 10th point. He'd made it to the final 9. 3 groups of 3 squaring off against each other, 1 at a time, only the holder of the highest points advancing. It wouldn't be enough to win. Kel would have to win by more than a single hit. And he'd drawn the bad card. Tomorrow he'd have to fight not one, but both matches. He pitied the prince, but there was no going back now. Kel had told Rye about the king's request that he keep to the palace. Of course, he'd told him after sneaking out to the match.
"He's going to have a fit if he finds out," Rye warned.
"Which is why he won't," said Kel.
Rye looked unconvinced. For all his rakish play, he'd never been good at disobeying his father. Up until recently, neither had Kel.
"Speaking of tomorrow," said Rye from the bed, "you need to start losing."
Kel stiffened, sending a fresh jab of pain through his shoulder.
"What? Why? Do you have any idea how hard this was to plan? To pull off? It's honestly a miracle we haven't been found out."
Kel got to his feet, testing his shoulder.
"Well, that's a vote of confidence, and I'm not going to let you blow it by winning."
"I have no intention of winning the tournament. We're only to the 9s.
Kel felt like he was missing something. The look on Rye's face confirmed it.
"Top 36 becomes 18, said Rye slowly. "Top 18 becomes 9.
"Yes, I can do math," said Kel, buttoning his tunic.
"Top 9 becomes 3, continued Rye. "And what happens to those 3, wise mathematician Kel?"
Kel frowned, and then it hit him.
"Oh.
Oh,"
Rye parroted, hopping down from the bed.
"The unmasking ceremony," said Kel.
"Yes, that," said his brother.
The Essentosh had few rules when it came to fighting, and fewer still when it came to the guises worn during those fights. Competitors were free to maintain their personas for most of the tournament, but the unmasking ceremony required the 3 finalists to reveal themselves to the crowds and kings, to remove their masks and keep them off for the final match and the subsequent crowning. Like many of the tournament's rituals, the origin of the unmasking ceremony was fading from memory. But Kel knew the story hailed from the earliest days of the peace, when an assassin tried to use the tournament and the anonymity it afforded to kill the Faroan royal family. The assassin slew the winning magician and donned his helmet, and when the kings and queens of the 3 empires invited him onto their dais to receive the prize, he struck, killing the Faroan queen and gravely wounding a young royal before he was stopped. The fledgling peace might have been shattered then and there, but no one was willing to claim the assassin, who died before he could confess. In the end, the peace between the kingdoms held, but the unmasking ceremony was born.
"You cannot advance beyond the 9s, said Rye definitively.
Kel nodded, heart sinking.
"Cheer up, brother," said the prince, pinning the royal seal over his breast. "You've still 2 matches to fight, and who knows? Maybe someone will even beat you fairly."
Rye went for the door, and Kel fell in step behind him.
"Sir," said Hostra. "A word?"
Kel stopped.
Rye paused in the doorway and looked back.
"Are you coming?"
"I'll catch up.
If you don't show, I'm likely to do something foolish, like throw myself at Alucard."
"I won't miss the stupid ball," snapped Kel.
Rye winked and shut the door behind him. Kel turned to his guard.
What is it, Hostra?
The guard looked profoundly nervous.
It's just... while you were competing, I came back to the palace to check on staff. The king was passing through, and he stopped and asked me how you'd spent the day.
Hostra hesitated, leaving the obvious unspoken. The king wouldn't have asked such a thing if he'd known of Kel's ruse, which meant he didn't. Kel stiffened.
And what did you say?
He asked, bracing himself. Hostra's gaze went to the floor.
I told him that you hadn't left the palace. You lied to the king?
Asked Kel, his voice carefully even.
It wasn't really a lie, said Hostra slowly, looking up. Not in the strictest sense.
How so?
Well, I told him that Kel didn't leave the palace. I said nothing about Kamarov.
Kel stared at the young man in amazement.
Thank you, Hostra. Rai and I, we shouldn't have put you in that position.
No, said Hostra with surprising firmness, and then quickly,
but I understand why you did.
The bells started ringing. The ball had begun. Kel felt a sharp pain in his shoulder and strongly suspected Rai of making a point.
Well, he said, heading for the door, you won't have to lie much longer.
That night, Lila had half a mind to go to the ball. Now that she knew the truth, she wanted to see Kel's face without the mask, as if she might be able to see the deception written in the lines of his frown. Instead, she ended up wandering the docks, watching the ships bob up and down, listening to the hush of water against their hulls. Her mask hung from her fingertips, its jaws wide. The docks themselves were strangely empty. Most of the sailors and dock workers must have ventured to the pubs and parties, or at least the night market. Men at sea loved land more than anyone on shore, and they knew how to make the best of it. That was quite a match today, said a voice. A moment later, Alucard appeared, falling in step beside her. She thought of their words that morning, of the hurt in his voice when he asked why she'd done it, stolen Elsor's identity, put herself, put them all, at risk. And there it was again, that treacherous desire to apologize, to ask for her place back on his ship, or at least in his graces. Following me again? She asked. Shouldn't you be celebrating? Alucard tipped his head back. I had no taste for it tonight. Besides, he said, his gaze falling, I wanted to see what you did that was so much better than balls. You wanted to make sure I didn't get into trouble. I'm not your father, Bard. I should hope not. Fathers shouldn't try to seduce their daughters to learn their secrets. He shook his head ruefully. It was one time. When I was younger, she said absently, I used to walk the docks back in London, my London, looking at all the ships that came in. Some days I imagined what mine would look like. Other days I just tried to imagine one that would take me away. Alucard was staring at her. What? That's the first time you've ever volunteered a piece of information. Lila smiled crookedly. Don't get used to it. They walked in silence for a few moments, Lila's pockets jingling. The isle shone red beside them, and in the distance the palace glowed. But Alucard had never been good with silence. So this is what you do instead of dancing, he said. Haunt the docks like some sailor's ghost. Well, only when I get bored of doing this. She pulled a fist from her pocket and opened it to reveal a collection of jewelry, coins, trinkets. Alucard shook his head, exasperated. Why? Lila shrugged. Because it was familiar, she might say, and she was good at it. Plus, the contents of people's pockets were far more interesting in this London. She'd found a dream stone, a fire pebble, and something that looked like a compass but wasn't. Once a thief, always a thief. What's this? he asked, plucking the sliver of white stone from amid the tangle of stolen gems. Lila tensed. That's mine, she said. A souvenir. He shrugged and dropped the shard back onto the pile.
You're going to get caught.
Then I better have my fun while I still can, she said, pocketing the lot. And who knows? Maybe the crown will pardon me, too.
I wouldn't hold your breath.
Alucard had begun rubbing his wrists, and realizing it, stopped and smoothed his coat.
Well, you may content yourself with haunting docks and robbing passers-by, but I'd rather have a hot drink and a bit of finery, so...
He gave her a sweeping bow.
Can I trust you to stay out of trouble, at least until tomorrow?
Lila only smirked. I'll try. Halfway back toward the wandering road, Lila knew she was being followed. She could hear their steps, smell their magic on the air, feel her heart pick up in that old, familiar way. So when she glanced back and saw someone in the narrow road, she wasn't surprised. She didn't run. She should have cut onto a main road when she first noticed them, put herself in public view. Instead, Lila did the one thing she'd promised Alucard she'd try not to do. She found trouble. When she reached the next turn in the road, an alley, she took it. Something glinted at the far end, and Lila took a step toward it before she realized what it was. A knife. She twisted out of the way as it came sailing toward her. She was fast, but not quite fast enough. The blade grazed her side before clattering to the ground. Lila pressed her palm against her waist. The cut was shallow, barely bleeding, and when her gaze flicked back up, she saw a man, his edges blurring into the dark. Lila spun, but the entrance to the alley was being blocked by another shape. She shifted her stance, trying to keep her eyes on both at once. But as she stepped into the deeper shadow of the alley wall, a hand grasped her shoulder and she lurched forward as a third figure stepped out of the dark. Nowhere to run. She took a step toward the shape at the alley's mouth, hoping for a drunken sailor or a thug. And then she saw the gold. Varices wasn't wearing his helmet, and without it she could see the rest of the pattern that traced up above his eyes and into his hairline.
Elsor,
he hissed, his Faroan accent turning the name into a serpentine sound. Shit, thought Lila. But all she said was, you again.
You're cheating scum,
he continued in slurring Arnesian.
I don't know how you did it, but I saw it. I felt it. There was no way you could have...
Don't be sore, she interrupted. It was just a get... She was cut off, as a fist connected with her wounded side, and she doubled over, coughing. The blow hadn't come from Varices, but one of the others, their gemmed faces masked by dark cloth. Lila's grip tightened on the metal-lined mask in her hand, and she struck, slamming the helmet into the nearest man's forehead. He cried out and staggered back, but before Lila could strike again, they were on her, six hands to her two, slamming her into the alley wall. She stumbled forward as one wrenched her arm behind her back. Lila dropped to one knee on instinct and rolled, throwing the man over her shoulder. But before she could stand, a boot cracked across her jaw. The darkness exploded into shards of fractured light, and an arm wrapped around her throat from behind, hauling her to her feet. She scrambled for the knife she kept against her back, but the man caught her wrist and twisted it viciously up. Lila was trapped. She waited for the surge of power she'd felt in the arena, waited for the world to slow and her strength to return, but nothing happened. So she did something unexpected. She laughed. She didn't feel like laughing. Pain roared through her shoulder and she could barely breathe. But she did it anyway, and was rewarded by confusion spreading like a stain across Varices' face.
You're pathetic, she spat.
You couldn't beat me one-on-ones, you come at me with three? All you do is prove how weak you really are. She reached for magic, for fire or earth, even for bone, but nothing came. Her head pounded, and blood continued to trickle from the wound at her side.
"You think yours are the only people who can spell metal?"
Varices hissed, bringing the knife to her throat. Lila met his gaze. "You're really going to kill me? Just because you lost a match?"
"No,"
he said.
"Like for like. You cheated. So will I."
"You've already lost," she snapped. "What's the fucking point?"
"A country is not a man, but a man is a country," he said.
And then to his men,
"Get rid of him."
The other two began to drag her toward the docks. "Can't even do it yourself," she chided. If the jab landed, he didn't let it show. Just turned and began to walk away. "Varices," she called after him. "I'll give you a choice."
"Oh?"
He glanced back, pale green eyes widening with amusement. "You can let me go right now and walk away," she said slowly, "or I will kill you all." He smiled.
"And if I let you go, I suppose we will part as friends?"
"Oh no," she said, shaking her head. "I'm going to kill you either way. But if your men let me go now, I won't kill them as well." For a moment, she thought she felt the arm at her throat loosen, but then it was back, twice as tight. "Shit," she thought, as Varices came toward her, spinning the knife in his hand.
"If only words were weapons," he said,
bringing the blade down. The handle crashed against her temple, and everything went black.